You are now part of a social experiment.
See now where my limit is. Only God knows. It's like they just wanna see you struggle. I swear they don't wanna see you shine.
They don't.
It's like they just want you to bleed and they want you to fall. They don't want you to be where the streets are paved with gold.
Welcome to Mastermind, the home of Black excellence and self-mastery. Yes, your host, Mr. G.
Thank you for joining us today on the journey towards self-mastery. Our next guest hails from Baltimore, Maryland. She's a veteran, an educator, activist, historian, and entrepreneur. She received her doctorate in engineering at Morgan State University, where she's also a professor in the Department of Engineering. She's founder of Ed Anime Productions, a company that uses animation to teach children history, math, science, education, and health through the lens of Black people and the use of hip-hop. Ed Anime also offers teaching materials for schools and parents to continue the rich information that is being presented in the programs. She's also the founder of Conscious Ingenuity, a program that provides a culturally responsive framework to teaching STEM. When she's not doing that, working for our children, she's interviewing Black scholars and educators on her YouTube platform and doing many other things. Let's welcome today Dr. Oya Ma'at to the program. Dr. Maya, how you doing today?
I'm doing fine, warrior. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. Now we have you here today. I'm excited.
Ashe, I'm likewise. I'm equally excited to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation, and I look forward to hearing all the questions that you have, and I'll make sure that I answer them to the best of my ability.
Indeed, indeed. It is always an honor to have women, Black women, in these arenas doing the work for us because, you know, generally, it is a male-dominated space when it comes to presenting this type of material. So I do appreciate the many Black women that are on the front lines fighting for us. So I appreciate you.
Ashe, thank you, brother. And I'm glad that you said that because you're right. It is a very male-dominated field. I mean, it's been like this for a while. Like even when I think back to the days of like Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, I mean, mm-hmm. She was in there with Dr. Ben, you know, Dr. John Henry Clark. You had Dr. Khalid Muhammad was on the scene. And so she was with the fellas, you know, and running with right. the fellas. And so again, as you stated, usually a lot of brothers, you know, are doing this work. So salute to the sisters who are on the front lines doing this work now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. On the program, we like to start off with the meaning of the name. So your name is very unique, Dr. Oya Ma'at. So can you share with us exactly what your name means and what made you make the decision to change your name?
Oh, this is crazy because right now, like that question literally aligns with what's happening in my life right now. And I literally got off the phone with my Baba Lau like 10 or 20 minutes ago. And he and I were talking about I'm going to actually legally change my name. I'm still going to use Dr. Oya Edward Ma'at. He divined and said that Ifa Sik, you know, that's what you're known for. Continue to use it. But I'm actually in the process of legally changing my name. But anyway, Dr. Oya Edward Ma'at, how did that come about? Well, I first chose Ma'at. Ma'at mm-hmm. was the first thing I chose. And so if people go back, and I'm talking about to like 2014 and 2015 and look at videos, you'll just hear people call me Dr. Ma'at. Dr. Ma'at, Ma'at, Ma'at. And I chose Ma'at because that is a constant reminder for me to think Ma'at, speak Ma'at, live Ma'at, and teach Ma'at. And by Ma'at, for those of you who may be unfamiliar with that term, Ma'at is an ancient Kemetic system, a system of morals that we use to guide our lives. And so we have seven principles. I know some people say the 42 principles of Ma'at, but when I say seven principles, I'm talking about the seven main principles of, you know, truth, justice, reciprocity, harmony, balance, order. And I feel like I'm forgetting one more. Which one am I forgetting? I feel like I'm forgetting one more. We said it, truth, justice, right? Truth, justice, reciprocity, order, balance, harmony. I feel like did I say order already? I feel like I said order.
You said order. You said order.
I said balance,
yeah,
right?
That last one. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm having a brain freeze right now. We got to come back to that.
Yeah,
but those seven, we got to come back to that because it's a long day. And so again, so I wanted to, you know how in traditional African culture, you're typically given a name that's connected A to your destiny and B, a name that inspires you, right? To remind you of who you are, a name that's connected mm-hmm. to your family, a name that inspires you or that's connected to your self-actualization, a name that's connected to your mission. And so I chose my aunt because I said, wait a minute, that's what I want to strive to be. You know, my aunt, think my aunt, speak my aunt, and live my aunt. That's for one. Two, I pride myself in my character. You know, and my aunt is all about character. And so I pride myself in that. And I want to remind myself that that is what I should be. I should be thinking my aunt, speaking my aunt, and living my aunt, and teaching my aunt. And so mm-hmm. everything was my aunt, my aunt, my aunt, my aunt, my aunt. And so then I began to add Oya. So while it was Dr. Oya, my aunt. So Oya, the warrior goddess, the warrior deity, right? In the Yoruba tradition, right? So the warrior, you know, she's a warrior. She's the wind. She's the protector of the ancestors. And you already know that when you hear me talk, I always talk about, you know, standing on the shoulders of our ancestors and protecting, you know, the legacy, you know, of our ancestors. And so she was, you know, Oya is that, you know, she was also a fierce protector of our ancestors. So Dr. Oya Ma'at, so that warrior goddess, right, that stands on the shoulders of her ancestors, protects her ancestors, and stands on my aunt, right? And then mm-hmm. Edwa, born on a Monday. I was born on a Monday, okay, in 1981. Born on a Monday, all right? So that warrior goddess, born on a Monday, standing on my aunt, truth, justice, reciprocity, balance, and harmony. I feel like I'm missing one more, though, but we'll get to it.
We'll get to that. That is, you know, fascinating. It's interesting to me because I kind of like getting into, you know, consciousness and learning about, you know, people and presenting information. I feel like it's very sensitive because when you're getting into consciousness, you kind of see whoever has information like godlike, like they are just giving you food, nurturing you and things like that. And I feel like sometimes we get sucked into this vortex of people that claim to have information or claim to be embodying certain principles, but they really don't. Like,
come
they might
on.
Be hustling or, you know, they have other alternative, you know, things that they have in mind. Meanwhile, we're following them. So I wanted to ask too, like, in your view, like for people just getting into things that's looking at different people's work, how do you understand and know, like, the person that is giving me this information is, you know, not just trustworthy, but they're giving me accurate information and it's something that, you know, I can fact check and things like that? Because a lot of us are just getting into information, especially with history and things like that. So how do I know what they're presenting is truthful and is accurate?
Absolutely. That was a beautiful question. I also want to say it's propriety, or some people may say righteousness. So that was the principle we were missing. Some people say righteousness and some people say propriety. So I wanted to make sure that we plug that for the audience. And so anyway,
thank you.
That was a beautiful question. Mm-hmm. So I would say this, trust no one. And I know that may sound harsh to say, mm-hmm. but when you come into this, especially online, like in this internet world, right, this worldwide web, and this World Wide Web it has a lot of misinformation and disinformation, right? Even mild information. But when you go into this World Wide Web or this internet, okay, people are on social media and we're posting all sorts of stuff. You know, people post everything, and some people read memes and say, "Oh, I read a meme that said that gave these statistics." Well, yep. did you check it? Or did you just take it as face value? You know, don't take things so literal. When you hear people speak, I know that sometimes we get caught up in charisma. Oh, he was a charismatic speaker and it sounded good. Well, just because it sounds good, is it good? Right. So it sounds good, but is it really good for you? Right. And so, you know, I always say, trust no one, you know, even me, whatever I say out of my mouth, go fact check what I'm telling you. Go do your due diligence. I think sometimes we're very lazy. You know, very intellectually lazy, in a sense that we say that we want the information and we get exposed to certain things, but then I don't even think that is that we don't have the capacity. I think we just don't, we're not willing to say, well, I heard this piece of information. Let me go a step further and validate this information, right? Mm-hmm. Is this information valid? So we have to do our due diligence. So it's great, you know, on social media that people are putting out things, information, if that's what you want to call it. But we have to check this stuff. We have to validate things that are being said and do our own due diligence. We have to know how to research. You know, a lot of people think that researching is just throwing something in Google and, you know, the first website that pops up, you read it, you know, but is that a credible website that you're getting your information from? Who vetted, you know, this website? You know, they come back to me, Dr. Mai, you're wrong. And the African genius didn't build the pyramids. Aliens did, because I went to alienpyramid.com and this is what they're saying on the website. Right. And so we got to understand, you know, how to research. We got to understand the difference between, you know, scholarly work versus non-scholarly work. We want to listen to people who've been vetted by credible people. And when I said that on the internet, people got upset with me. They got upset. What do you mean that these people need to be vetted, Dr. Ma'at? Yes, people you listen to should be vetted. Who vetted? And I'm talking about vetted by people in their area. So, for example, let me ask you a question, Brother G.
Mm-hmm.
Would you get your family? Would you gather your family and take your family on an airplane that's being flown by a pilot that said, hey, man, you know, I'm an autodidact. I just taught myself how to fly. And, you know, we're getting ready to take off, you know, 5,000 feet in the air. But, you know, no one vetted me. I didn't go to school or anything. I'm self-taught. Would you trust that?
Absolutely not.
You wouldn't. You want to get on a plane that is flown by a pilot who has gone through a vetting process, right? Which means that this pilot has either gone to school, they have received some certifications, something. Now, when I say that, a lot of my brothers and sisters say, well, what do you mean? You mean the white man got to vet us? You know, the white man degree and the white man. I didn't say the white man anything. I'm simply saying that in any school of thought, the knowledge that is disseminated within that school of thought, or the knowledge that has come out of that school of thought, that is imparted to the people who subscribe to that school of thought, there's a process by which they are vetted. You know, you just don't come out and say, you know, like, and I was having this conversation with Dr. Wesley Muhammad. Shout out to him. He said, Doc, you are 100% correctly. He said, even here in the Nation of Islam, he said, we go through a vetting process. He said, we just don't pop up and become student ministers because we went home and read some books. There's a vetting process, right? Even in the Yoruba tradition, you don't have Baba Lao's that just wake up one day and say, I'm a Baba Lao. No, you go through a process, you know? And so I say all that to say, these people who we're listening to on the internet, on the radio, wherever, let's make sure that we do our due diligence in vetting the so-called information that they are putting out. That's one. And then let's tune into people who we know have been vetted. Let me give you an example. Dr. Ben. A lot of people say, I love Dr. Ben. I'm a fan of Dr. Ben. I'm a supporter. I love his work. Well, Dr. Ben trained Baba Ashwal Kwesi. So if you love Dr. Ben, then you should be equally loving Baba Ashwal Kwesi, who is like his protege. Same thing with Dr. Francis Crest Welsing. Dr. Francis Crest Welsing had Dr. Patricia Newton, and peace be upon Dr. Patricia Newton's soul. She just became an ancestor a year ago, I think a year or two ago. But she studied under Dr. Francis Crest Welsing. So that was her protege. So, yes, I'm going to listen to Dr. Patricia Newton. I'm going to listen to Bob Ashwal Kwesi. These were the people who actually studied at the feet of our master teachers. So we want to tune into people like that, not these new fools that are on the internet running around, right, with giving out so-called information, telling our people that the transatlantic slave trade, the Ma'afa, never happened. Telling our people that Harriet Tubman didn't exist. Telling our people that we've always been in America. We're not from America. Africa. Africa isn't the home place of humanity. We've always been in America, and everything happened in reverse from what the white. Stop listening to these fools.
Man, you just said so much, man, that I want to tackle. But what you just said kind of made me think about right now. Just history within itself. You have people that's like, yo, there's no way you can go back in time and prove that this thing happened 100%. I can't even remember what happened last week. How do we, you know, go back in time and say this is 100%? This is what happened. This is how it happened. And this and that and the third. But it's funny. We don't say that when it comes to, you know, European history and things like that. But just history within itself. How do you think as Black people, we should be looking at history and receiving it? What is the purpose of it?
So the purpose or a purpose of history is to use history as a tool to empower us. So we cannot, we look at the plight of Black Americans, right? Not even just Black Americans, Black people all over the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know your history, then you don't know what shaped the conditions that we are currently experiencing, right? And then if you don't know, if you're not aware of the past forces or practices or policies that shaped our condition today, then how do you know how to fix it? And then how will you guard yourself against things happening to you again in the future? So we use history as a tool to say, okay, wait a minute. Okay, so for example, we're reading a book right now in my book club, the Read Book Club. We're reading The Color of Law by Richard Rothstein. And in that particular book, he's describing how our federal and state governments segregated America and how our governments created Black poverty and Black ghettos. And they did it through policy and they also did it through terror. Okay.
Mm.
And so, for example, there was in 1956 or 1957, they passed the Highway Act, which permitted the government to just run highways through the Black community. So they used the highway system as a tool to destroy Black communities, right? And to keep us from being downtown where the white folks were working and shopping, right? So now with that information, now in the future, if our politicians come to us and say, we're getting ready to propose an act for another highway, a highway here. Now we can say, well, wait a minute. How would this act, you know, impact Black people? Where are you running this highway through? Because in the past, when you all were developing highway systems, you were destroying Black communities. That was the purpose of it. So now with understanding the past policies and practices, now we can arm ourselves and we can actually ask the right questions and support the right candidates, right? Because now we understand, we have a deeper understanding of these policies and practices. And so we use history as a tool to protect ourselves, a tool to empower ourselves. We also use history as a tool to shape our identity. Right. So I tell my students all the time, I don't show them, you know, the pyramids and the oldest mathematical artifacts in Africa just to, just to show it to them. I'm showing you this to show you the African genius that lies within you. I'm showing you this to counter the idea that the history of Black people started with slavery. Right. Can you imagine what that does to the identity of children when you start their history with slavery and you start other people's history with, oh, they traveled to these different parts of the world. They established these nations. They became presidents. They did this. But then when it comes to your history, you were enslaved. Abraham Lincoln freed you. Then here comes Dr. Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks, right? Can you imagine what that does to our identity, right?
Well, I think it creates something that you've mentioned in a previous interview where kids are talking about, I'm not my ancestors. I wouldn't be a slave. You know, I wouldn't do this and that and the third because they don't have the information of what happened before and the people that were fighting back. So it does create that whole looking back at us in disgust, almost like, I can't believe my ancestors. Yeah.
They're ashamed. You become ashamed of who you are and where you come from. That's a negative self-identity. And then on top of that, then you're bombarded with negative images of yourself day in and day out. Black men are criminals. Then you got Black women. They, you know, they're online. They're out of control. They're promoting this whore culture now. And so, look at all of these. So on top of your history looking jacked up, right? Your ancestors were slaves. They were nothing. They never produced nothing. I remember when I first released Meltrek episode 1, exploring ancient Africa. And in that particular film, we take children back in time to learn about the great kingdoms of Africa. So the whole objective of Mel Trek episode one was to teach our babies that our history doesn't begin with slavery. So we take them again back in time to learn about these great civilizations. They learn that African people are the mothers and fathers of humanity. And we take them over to, we start them at Kemet and the Nile Valley. Then we take them from the Nile Valley over to West Africa, then to the central part, then to the south part. And we expose them to different landscape and structures and different kings and queens. And so when I released that film, I got attacked. There were so many white folks, so-called white people, who said, why are you lying to your children? Black people come from a zero contribution race. Wow. And that's what a lot of, not only do they believe that, but unfortunately, some of our own people believe that we have contributed nothing to the advancement of humanity, which is far from the truth. And we know that that adversely, you know, that that has to adversely impact our self-identity. So then you wonder why a lot of black people, black African people, are suffering from self-hate and low self-esteem or unhealthy self-esteem. Because we have a negative self-identity. And so, again, history will help to combat that, knowing that our ancestors were great, understanding that even during the Maafa, right, during the Maafa, which is a Swahili word for the great disaster, a term that was coined by Mama or Nana, Marimba Annie, to describe the era of colonization and enslavement. During that time, we fought back. We always fought. We always resisted. Everywhere that there was slavery, there were maroon communities, thousands of them, filled with black African people who said, I reject slavery and I'm going to go over here and build my own communities. And so we have to teach that history. You get what I'm saying? So history will help shape a positive identity. So again, I just kind of want to summarize because I know I said a lot. History is a tool that we can use to empower ourselves, that we should use to empower ourselves. It is a tool that we should use to protect ourselves. And it's a tool that we should use to shape or foster or engender a positive self-identity.
And that is powerful. Very, very powerful. I know people might be wondering too, like, who is this Dr. Maat? Like, you know, she's an engineer. She's not no historian. What's she talking about? So
let's get to that.
Let's get back to that. Let's rewind a little bit and get into some of your childhood. I know your parents were activists and educators. So can you share a little bit about your childhood with us and, you know, kind of your schooling, your educational process and what led you to kind of where you're at now?
Absolutely. Fabulous question. But I do want to address that where people say she's talking about African history and culture, but she's an engineer. Let's get to that. So I don't want you to forget that question. But anyway, born and raised in Baltimore, actually Baltimore County, born and raised in Baltimore County. Pop, my father is I call him Pop Pops. And he's a community activist. Of course, he's retired now. And he's 75. And mom just turned 70. And so she's still working. Pops is chilling. He said, I'm done. And so anyway, born, two baby boomers raised me. And they were, of course, born and raised in Baltimore City. My father, a Vietnam veteran, got out of the military, he came back home, went to Morgan State University, finished up his degree in economics. My mom is an educator, went to school, got her degrees in education. And so now you see, right, you kind of see the Maat right there, you know, so you have the community activist who's, yes, he's educated. He has his bachelor's. But then you have my mother who went all the way. She got her master's in education and she got an advanced certificate. She maybe was a few credits shy of like a PhD in education. So those two came together and produced two children. So I'm the youngest of two children. And so you have me. It's like I really call myself the perfect blend of both of my parents, right? The community activism and also the education side. I believe that we should educate to liberate. And I also believe that we nation build through STEAM. Okay. Science, technology, engineering, art, agriculture, and math. Mathematics.
Added a few pieces. Okay.
Absolutely. And so we nation build using those tools. And so that is my entire, that's like my mantra. You see what I'm saying? Educate, deliberate, mm-hmm. and independence through STEAM, nation building, independence and nation building through STEAM. And so that's like my mantra. And so anyway, when they got together, they end up purchasing a house in Baltimore County. And so my family, we moved out there. And so I was raised in the county, attended a mixture of public and private school. So I was in private school, maybe like the first couple of years. Then I went to public school. Then I was in private school for a couple of years. And then I finished out in public school.
Were these mostly black schools or mixed?
Mostly black. Okay. With the exception of one, which was like very diverse. So you had black, you had Hispanic, you had white, you had Asian. And so I went to that school for about 3 years. But most of the schools that I've attended, I mean, I live in Baltimore. It's predominantly black. And so then after I left high school, I went to Morgan and ended up with a bachelor's in electrical engineering. My mother came home with a magazine one day and she was like, you know, these are the top paying jobs. And at the top was computer engineering. And I was like, well, engineering is math and science. I've always been good with those. I'll go with that. Because, again, at that particular time, I'm like a 17-year-old girl, 18-year-old girl. So I'm thinking about I'm following the philosophy of the boomers. Right. And that is to, you know, get a good education and get a job. Right. That was the philosophy of the baby boomers. And shout out to the 70s and 80s babies. We changed that. And we changed that philosophy. So anyway. So at that particular time, I chose computer engineering. We went to Morgan. Morgan didn't have computer engineering. They had electrical engineering. And so when I got over there, they were like, oh, yeah, you can still do computer engineering. You know, they told me electrical engineering is so broad, which it is. Mm. A lot of people think when they hear electrical engineering, a lot of people are ignorant to the field. They think that electricity, they think of electricity, electrical engineering. They think it's electricity is electricity. It's not. Mm. Electrical engineers, we do everything. We do cybersecurity. We do signal processing. We build systems. We wouldn't be on this internet right now if it wasn't for an electrical engineer. You wouldn't even have those headphones. We wouldn't be on the computer. Electrical engineering makes the world go round. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we do everything. It's such a broad, broad field. And so anyway, got into the field, did that. And I was presented with an opportunity by one of the professors to get into a 5-year doctoral program. And so I ended up getting into that program. It took me a while to finish because I took a break for a few years, but got back and I went back and eventually earned my doctoral degree, doctor of engineering degree in 2013. But let me say this. Mm-hmm. I wanted to initially go to college and major in history or African American studies or Africana studies. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be a history teacher. And my mother was against that. She said, you're not going to make any money. You figure this is a woman who was an educator, spent 35 years in the school system. She said, you're not going to make any money, you know, being a history teacher, you know. So no. We're going to stick with this engineering thing. Okay. But when I got into engineering, I absolutely loved it, you know, because engineering is about problem solving, using science and math and technology to solve problems. Engineering requires critical thinking skills. And so, you literally are groomed, or the skills that it takes to become an engineer, you develop them as you are matriculating through an engineering program. And those critical thinking skills that you're developing, how to be analytical, evaluative, how to research, how to problem solve, these are skills that you can take and apply to any area that you choose. And so I love engineering because engineering is about thinking and it's about problem solving. Okay. And so I got into it and I actually loved it. But then as I began, I got out there, I went in industry for a little bit, didn't like industry. My calling was always to teach. Eventually I went back to teach at Morgan. I've been at Morgan since 2017. And what I noticed is that our students are very disconnected from the curriculum, from the curriculum. So I started thinking, what can I do? Right. To motivate them, to keep them engaged, to increase engagement, to increase their comprehension or strengthen their comprehension. You know, what can I do to, because at that time, again, look at it. I mean, the students aren't motivated. They aren't engaged. You can imagine how they performed. Right. And so how do I get my passing rates up? And what I decided from many years of research is to use an African-centered approach to teaching engineering. I'm teaching at a predominantly black institution, right? We have 76, our population is 76% African-American, right? And so I said, well, you know what? I'm going to use an African-centered approach. And using the African-centered approach is nothing new. You know, I'm thinking about Kwame Nakoto. Shout out to him. He wrote a book called African-Centered Education Theory and Practice. Kwame Nakoto, I quote him a lot. Dr. Amos Wilson also talked about the need for utilizing an African-centered education. Dr. Francis Cress Welsin, Dr. Jamwanzo Kanjufu. You know, a lot of them talk about that. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to try to use that. And after using that, I saw my engagement go up. And so eventually that led me to establish a program called Conscious Ingenuity. Mm-hmm. And Conscious
Ingenuity. Before you get into that,
okay,
what is like the highlights of an African-centered approach for those of us that are like, well, what exactly is that?
So when you say an African-centered approach to teaching, you're saying that you are centering the experience, the culture, the history, the psychology of African people in your curriculum, in the way that you teach. That's what you're doing with an African-centered approach. So instead of coming in there, talking to you about the European contributions to electrical engineering, let's start off with talking about the African contributions to engineering. And better yet, we're going to talk about them. And then you have a project that you have to do, you know, on it. Okay. Instead of coming in there and when I talk, the language even that I use, my dialect, I always use cultural references in so when I teach you a concept, I relate it to something that's happening in our community, right? Something that my students can relate to in our culture. So I use a lot of cultural references. I also, like, again, highlight the African contributions to STEM. Also have created a communal environment. So I don't just say Mr. So-and-so. We don't use Mr. in my class. Brother so-and-so, sister so-and-so. So we're like a family. When we problem solve together. Because remember, African people are what? Communal people. So what we do together. We have discussions, class discussions. Before we even get into engineering, we're talking about what's happening in the world. So when Takeoff was murdered and students were impacted by that on social media, guess what? The next day, their professor walked in the door and talked about that and had conversations with them about toxic rap, deaf culture that's being promoted in music. See, we have those conversations. All of that sort of stuff constitutes an African-centered approach to teaching these students.
That is powerful, powerful. You were going to add something else after you mentioned the African-centered approach.
Repeat your question, brother.
No, I said you were going to add something else after you mentioned the
African. No, I was done. Okay. Yeah, I was done.
Okay, cool. All right, so that's been your approach to teaching, which I think is great. And I think that teaching should mimic the way in which, you know, what it is your population is. And we aren't really taught that. We're taught to have this, you know, kind of Eurocentric idea of teaching and presenting that and not presenting what your population looks like and relating to them. So I think that is definitely a great way of distributing information that's vital to children. So what was your path towards consciousness? I know you mentioned your parents with the education. Were they teaching you about consciousness and Black history?
Absolutely not.
Something that
absolutely not. I mean, my father would talk about World War. My father is he loves studying war history. So we've always had conversation about different wars, particularly the Vietnam War, because that's the war that he fought in. He was there in 1966 and 1967. But, and he talked about different things that was happening happening with the Black community. But no one talked to me about, African history, African culture. No, I didn't get that at home. You know, my mom is a Christian. So I was raised in the church as a Christian. And so there was it wasn't no Black history anything. I mean, Black History Month, yes. But nothing outside of Black History Month and going to church. And so I came into consciousness or started my journey, in 1996. And, I always tell this story. I was downtown hanging out in Baltimore at a place called Lexington Market, which is, like I said, downtown Baltimore. Anybody can Google Lexington Market. And there was a brother. I don't even know why we was down there. I think that my cousins and I, we weren't supposed to be there. I think we may have been cutting school. I don't know. But I know we were down there hanging out, and we probably shouldn't have been down there hanging out, but we were. And so we walked past a brother who was selling books. And so during that time, a lot of people used to be like Lexington Market was like an open market. You had, you know, inside because it's a building. You can go inside. They have all of these different places where you can eat. But then they also have like an outside where you have a lot of vendors selling different things. And so we walked past a brother. He's selling some books. And we looked at his books. And of course, at 15, we was like, psh, let's keep it pushing. I ain't spending no money on books. So we're walking off and the brother said, you. And everybody turned around. I'm turning around. He's you. And I'm who me? Yeah, you. He said, come on over here. He said, look. I'll give you this book right here. I'll give it to you for free. And he put in my hand From the Browder File by Anthony T. Browder. And he said, Erykah Badu hands this book out at her concerts. And at this particular time, Erykah Badu was like really popping, you know, for our generation. So when he said that, it like piqued my interest. Oh, you're going to give me this book for free. One. And then two, Erykah Badu throws these in her audience. She gives them out of her concerts. Oh man, I want to take this and I want to read it. And so I took the book home with me. It sat on my dresser maybe for a couple of months. And then I began to become curious about the cover. And I opened up the book and sure enough, Baba Anthony T. Browder, in like the first two pages, he describes the cover artwork. So I read that and I'm like, wow, you know, and then it just reading about the artwork made me want to read more. And so before you know it, I'm reading through the book. And when I say that it felt like a light came on, I actually went back to school. I remember it was a teacher there named Miss Good. And I started talking to her about the different things that I was learning. And she was like, what book are you reading? You know, and I'm like just going in, you know, and I was getting the information from Baba Anthony T. Browder's work. So I'm learning about, you know, Kemet, the, you know, land of the black people. I'm learning that it was our people who built, you know, the pyramid and the Sphinx. You know, I'm learning about melanin. I'm learning about holidays and what they actually signify, the origin of holidays, the origin of Christianity, the politics of hair. He's the reason why I have locks. He's the reason why I started growing my hair out natural at the age of 15. And I locked when I was 17. I've been locked for 24 years. And so he's the reason why. And so after I read his book, I began to become hungry. And so I went to Everyone's Place, which is like the Kemet of Consciousness. It's a cultural bookstore here in Baltimore. I call it the Kemet of Consciousness. Some people say the Mecca of Consciousness, but I call it the Kemet of Consciousness. And so I went there and salute to Baba Nati and his queen or divine compliment, Mama Tabia. They own it. And Everyone's Place have been like it's like holy ground. We go there. You know, anybody that's into consciousness and culture, that's where they go. And they've been a staple in the community for decades now. And so I went there and Baba Nati gave me other books. You know, he gave me Breaking the Chains of Psychological Slavery by Dr. Naeem Akbar. So I started reading Dr. Naeem Akbar's work, Breaking the Chains of Psychological Slavery, The Community of Self, Know Thyself. The next you know, I'm reading Life and Opinions of Marcus Garvey. The next you know, I'm reading the autobiography of Malcolm X. So I'm just hungry now and I'm reading. And then I went back to sleep because it's kind of like you wake up, you run around, you're excited about this information and you're telling people, you start debating people and you're thinking that if I just give them this information, they're going to get the light is going to come on and they're going to begin to yearn for it like I did. And then you start realizing that, no, you're beefing with family members, you're beefing with friends. And so after a while, it was like, I just went back to sleep for a couple of years. And then
I think a lot of us that get into, you know, consciousness have that kind of experience with other people. That's like, yo, what could you possibly be reading all these books for? Like, what are you going to do with it? Like, how's it going to make you money? Like, why spend like that time? So it's bringing back memories.
Absolutely. And so it's like, you know, I went back to sleep for some years. And then one day my cousin, shout out to Kool-Aid. We call him Kool-Aid. His name is Aaron. But he came past the house one day and he turned on Sinetta TV, Black News 102. And they were having these brothers in New York. They're having all of these different types of conversations. You know, they're battling religion and talking about, you know, science and metaphysics and history. And so I was like, whoa, it kind of like, it rejuvenated me in a sense. I don't know if rejuvenate is the word I want to use, but it sparked my interest again to say, okay, well, maybe I can get back into this. And, you know, and so anyway, started watching that, and eventually I started calling in to the shows on, you know, when Sinetta would open up the phone line, I would call in on his Black News 102 platform, and I started debating Hebrews. And so, Sinetta had got a brother named Courtney to orchestrate a debate in Atlanta. And I think this was like June of 2014. And I went down there and I'm debating this Hebrew. And literally, like, he got so upset with me because he lost. And they gave me a standing ovation and I was pumped up, you know. And so anyway, I started debating folks. Shout out to the Amon Ra squad with brother Anka Ket. So he asked me to be on the squad. And so at that particular time, it was an African-centered research team that was combating pseudoisms in the community. And so I was a part of that team for a number of years, and until the team kind of, I mean, I would say we're still here, but we're not active. And so until the team became non-active. And so, mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I just, everybody kind of started doing their own thing. And so that's my story, man. I do want to say this. Mm-hmm. After meeting Brother Ankh, that's when I got put on with Dr. Ben and Dr. John Henry Clark, because, you know, Brother Ankh loves those two people. And so he put me on with the work of Dr. Ben, Dr. John Henry Clark. Then I met some brothers in Baltimore. Salute to the Temple of New African Thought minister, Dr. Minister Asar Winkler. He put me on with the work of Dr. Amos Wilson. So once I got in that community and started meeting different brothers, then I started learning about people that I didn't know of before and listening to their teachings. And so that's when I got on to Professor James Small and other people, Dr. Kaba Kamenei, Baba Ashwal Kwesi, and people like that.
That is a powerful, powerful experience. Interesting. So one of the things I did hear you mention in a previous interview was that, you know, after you graduated from, you know, Morgan State with your doctorate, you had all these job offers and opportunities to make some great engineering money. And you decided that you wanted to go another route. So what went into that decision and what route did you go into?
I wasn't happy. You know, like, I was interning at different places, and I was like, dang, go on, like, sitting in this cubicle running cold. Do I want to do this for the rest of my life? Right? Like, is this something that I want to do? You know, do I want to be in this research lab all day, you know, either running cold, testing cold, or designing systems? I mean, yeah, I could do that, but I love to teach. Teaching is my calling. And I told my mom that from the beginning. Think about how it went full circle. Remember, I told you when I was 17, what did I say? When I graduated, I wanted to be a history teacher. Right. And then I was kind of moved to go in another direction, which I make no regrets, because, again, I love engineering. But it came full circle. I knew then at 17 that I wanted to teach. I knew then. And so, again, I go through college. I get my doctorate. I go out there, I'm in industry, and I don't like it. I don't like it. I call my aunt on the job every day, like, auntie, I'm ready to come home. Like, this is so boring, because I was not connected. I could do the work, yes, but I wasn't connected to the work. I didn't feel like I was walking in my purpose. And so I left that, and I began to develop Meltrek. I actually developed the Meltrek program in 2014. Remember, I said I didn't start working at Morgan until 2017.
So did Meltrek come before Animation Productions?
It was Ed Anime Productions came first. And so the idea of Meltrek, actually, we came up with it the fall of 2013. But I said, if we're going to release this concept, it has to be under a company, right? So what's the name of the company? Ed Anime Productions. So I came up with Ed Anime, short for Educational Animation, Ed Anime Productions. Mm-hmm. But since then, Ed Anime Productions have become more than just a company that produces educational animations. We now produce books, storybooks, activity books, a curriculum, films, right? for history, to promote history, culture, and achievements of our people. Then we have Conscious Ingenuity, a program that utilizes STEAM to build character, confidence, and capabilities. We also have a program called the ASAFO Training Camp, which focuses on manhood development in boys between the ages of 12 and 14. So Ed Anime Productions have become so much more than just a company that produces educational animations.
And this is a family owned company, and I feel like when we get into, you know, business or passions, it's like so hard to convince your family about anything.
Come on. So, like, same. Look, so it didn't start with me. Like, it's the same with us. It was four owners initially. It was me, my two sons, and my cousin, my first cousin. And so since then, it's now become three, because I learned that some people just don't, you know, they don't value it, you know. And so it went from four owners to now three owners. Because as you said, sometimes, man, getting your family to see the value in you, in what you do, is the hardest. And I actually had that conversation with my mom and my father maybe a month or so ago. I said, it seems like we value external things more than we value internal things. And so I actually had that conversation also with my students at school. I said, you all, if J. Cole or Kendrick Lamar walked through this door, you would lose your minds right now. You would lose your minds. And all these people have done was create some music that you can vibe to, you know, and I'm not taking away with how music impacts people. But I say all that to say is that I told them, you would value your interaction with them more than you value your interaction with me and other professors. And even shout out to Mr. Lewis. He's a technician in the School of Engineering. He's like the backbone of our school, and he's we're in the trenches with you all. So you'll value a celebrity that you don't know, a celebrity that's not pouring anything into you other than the music they put out, but you'll value them more than the people who you have access to, which are your parents and your educators, your family members, and your neighbors. And so I want to say this. We tend to value things that aren't easily accessible to us. So you say, well, tag on, why is it that, you know, my family don't see the value in what I do? I don't feel like they value, because they have easy access to you. We value things that we don't have access to, and that's a problem. We have to learn to first value internal people, internal things first, before we value external people and external things.
Powerful, man. Powerful, powerful, powerful. Ah, man. So yeah, so walk us through the Meltrek process for those of us that, you know, are first coming into this whole thing. I mean, are you designing animations? This is an animation. Are you a cartoonist? Like, that's designing animations. Like, how did you figure all these pieces out, and what went into the work of this becoming just this getting into an idea to the final process of what we have today?
Okay, so beautiful, beautiful question, brother. So you asked me my process. When I first said that I wanted to create an animation, people laughed. What are you talking about? You're electrical engineering. How are you gonna create a film? You don't animate. Like, what are you gonna do? You know, so first of all, we came up with a concept. I wanna teach it. I wanna take children back in time to learn about the history, achievements, and culture of melanated people. Let's come up with a name. Mel is short for melanin. Trek means journey. So we're taking you on a journey to understand the history, culture, and achievements of melanated people. Meltrek. Then after that, we had to come up with a storyline. Right? Mm-hmm. A storyline. How many characters do we want in this story? Right? What are these characters going to experience? What are the personalities of the characters going to be like? You know, how are the characters going to speak? How are they going to look? What are going to be their facial expressions, their gestures, right? The way they think. So you have to really... You have to develop literally your characters, the personalities of your characters, and then you got to get into your storyline, right? You got to write your actual script. What are they going to say? Okay, once you have that, what are you going to say? And so we did that. We came together countless hours to discuss all of that, right? To develop our characters, to develop our storyline. Then after that, we had to start sketching. We call it a storyboard. So now that you have this, I mean, some people may do it in reverse. Some people may brainstorm like the characters and then create like a storyboard and then a script. We develop our characters first, then a script, and then we went through the storyboarding process. So now you're sketching each scene. What do you want to see in each scene? Down to the character's body language. You know, where are they going to be standing? Placement. So you have to think about all of that sort of stuff when you're creating a storyboard. After you create your storyboard, okay, so now you have your script. You have your storyboard. Now let's go to the studio. I'm just telling you my process. Somebody else may do it differently. Now let's go to the studio and actually record a voiceover. Once we have a voiceover, we use the voiceover in our storyboard to create what we call a rough animatic storyboard. And so that's literally like a sketches that kind of move, and you see the, you hear the voices behind the sketches that are moving, right? So it kind of looks like a rough 2D animation, but it's pencils, it's sketched. So you have a rough animatic storyboard, and then from your rough animatic storyboard, then you begin to use some sort of software to animate. And so I have a team of cartoonists and a team of animators that I work with to produce Meltrek. And so we do everything in-house minus the actual animation part. That part is outsourced to a team that I utilize to create the actual animations.
Gotcha. Man, so you kind of figured everything out, you know.
Is that engineering? Isn't that problem solving?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Just got to figure it out.
Yeah, so your kids are doing the voices and everything. And I'm just like thinking too, like, you know, again, when we have ventures where I don't want to do it today and all this. Like, did you have those type of struggles, and did your kids kind of start understanding?
Absolutely. They were crying and everything because they said I was in there like Ike Turner, right? You know, cut, you got to do it over. You got to do, you know? And so, yeah, absolutely, man. They, you know, it was times they didn't feel like doing it. They didn't feel like having meetings. They didn't feel like saying their lines, but we got through it. You know, we got through it. We got through it. And so Meltrek is currently being utilized, or it's been sold in 30 states and 10 countries, probably more than 10 countries. It was 10 countries the last time I checked, but it's probably more than 10 countries at this point. And so we got through it as a family. They were upset with me many times, but we got through it.
Yeah, it is powerful. I did, you know, check out a couple episodes. My daughter checked out some of the episodes as well. So definitely powerful material. And I think about a previous interview you had, you mentioned that one of the thought processes that you had was your son was like scrolling through media and stuff like that, and you wanted him to have something educational to look at, and you looked for it. There was nothing there. So you had to kind of, you know, create that. So
I don't want to say that nothing was there. We found one film, and it was called Tell Me Who I Am by Kid Positive. Shout out to Baba Daryl Grayson. And so he had Tell Me Who I Am, but this was a film that was produced in the late 90s. And I give thanks that he redigitized it recently. So it looks really, really good. But that was a film that we found for my son, and we played it over and over and over again. So then after that, it's like, what next? You know, what other films do we have out there that teaches history, teaches our history, our culture, and our achievements in a way that is entertaining for our children, right? Relatable and entertaining. And there weren't any outside of Tell Me Who I Am. And that's what kind of sparked the whole idea of producing Meltrek.
All right. So for those of us that are watching, eating this whole thing up with Meltrek, eating the information up, you have three videos out right now. So you could share with us like what they stem, you know, the those videos and what they're about. But do you have a thought process of expanding and making this into like, you know, 50 videos, 100 videos, and making it into a network? So those people that are thirsty for more information and more, you know, history and everything, for us to get that all in one spot? Or what's your mindset on, you know, expansion, and, you know, what are some of the videos that you already have about?
Okay, so we have two videos right now, Meltrek Episode 1, Exploring Ancient Africa, which again, I described that film earlier. It's a film that focuses on history prior to the Maafa. So Mama Marimba Annie, or Nana Marimba Annie, And I keep saying mama, but it's Nana, you know. But Nana Marimba Eni, she said that in African history, there are three eras, the Ma'at, the Ma'afa, and Sankofa. The Ma'at, the Ma'afa, and Sankofa. So she said, you know, we were in Ma'at prior to European and Arabic, right, invasion. Okay.
Right.
And then when it went into the Ma'afa during that period where, you know, European and Arabic invasions. And so we went into the period of Ma'afa, and now she said we're in a period of Sankofa where we're going back to fetch, going back to get, you know, our identity, our history and our culture. We're fetching and going back and we're returning to it. And so anyway, I would say that Meltrek episode one, Exploring Ancient Africa, would be Ma'at. It talks about the Ma'at era. Okay, in African history. And so Meltrek episode two, exploring the pre-Columbian Americas, I always tell people that is authentic U.S. history. So we take the children back in time to learn about the indigenous cultures in North mm-hmm. America and Mesoamerica and South America prior to the arrival of Christopher Columbus. And so I always say this is real history on this side, U.S. history, you know, and Mesoamerican history and South American history. And so that's Meltrek episode two. We're currently in the process of producing Meltrek episode three, which explores the Ma'afa. So now we're going to be talking about, well, how did the transatlantic slave trade start? Who were the major players and what happened during that period of time? And so we're going to dedicate three parts to explaining to the children what was going on during the Ma'afa and how our people were impacted. And so we're actually in the process of creating part one, and I can't wait to create the other two parts. And so, again, we're going to dedicate three parts to telling, or three episodes to telling that story. And so our plan is to create a full season for Meltrek episode for the Meltrek series. And I'm talking about a season with maybe 10 to 12 episodes. Mm. But after we finish the season, I'm done. Yeah, I'm finished. I'm done. Like in terms of just telling the story from beginning to end and what happened, you get what I'm saying? You have a whole series, you know, and so maybe do some touch ups here and there and redigitize some things, you know, because it's going to get older. Right. So maybe later on, maybe in the next 5 or 10 years, kind of redigitize it or, you know, update the animations to fit the new generation that's coming up, or utilize new technology in 10 years or 20 years to update it. But other than that, I mean, once we tell the whole story, we're finished, right? When we tell the story from beginning to end, but there is no end, right? Because we're still here and we're still grinding. And so from the beginning until where we are now. And so after that, I produced that, I'm actually finished. And, you know, if anything, I wouldn't mind maybe animating some short stories. But the whole objective of Meltrek is to tell our history the right way. So once I get through the post-emancipation, so the Reconstruction era, the Great Migration, the Freedom Movement, which consists of, you know, the Civil Rights Movement and the Black Power Movement. Right. Once we get through all of that type of stuff, I mean, the story has been told. And so the only thing I can do is maybe say, okay, maybe I'll create a little short animation that focuses on, you know, the Tuskegee men, you know, or, you know, a little short animation that talks about Black men in World War One or World War Two or the Buffalo Soldiers or the Korean, you know, so stuff like that, maybe like some short animations that will tell those individual stories. But once the Meltrek series is finished and once we produce those 10 to 12 episodes, it's over.
Got you. I mean, I wanted to go on forever, but definitely understand what you're saying. So while you're producing this material, two things, like how do you fact check for the information that you're providing? And then you're presenting information for children, elementary, middle school age. How do you know what is too much in regards to sensitivity to present, you know, because our history involves, you know, a bit of things that are difficult to digest, maybe for children and things like that. So how do you kind of decide, you know, what's too touchy to touch on and how to do it and things like that? Like, what's your thought process?
Absolutely. Absolutely, brother. And so really good question. Well, first and foremost, we've researched the information prior to putting it out there. On our team, we also have two educational specialists. Both of them are K-12 educators, both work here in the state of Maryland. And so they're on the board, you know, they're on our team, so they can tell us, I don't think this is appropriate for a middle school person or an elementary school person or a high school person. And so we have K-12 educators on our team that will, that let us know. They let us know what's appropriate and what's, you know, inappropriate for the students. And then again, we've researched all of the information that we put out there, and we use the works of our African scholars. So we use the work of, you know, Anthony T. Browder and, you know, Dr. Francis Cress Welsin and, you know, and all of those good people. So we use the work of our African ancestors, Dr. John Henry Clark, Dr. Ben, the stuff that they taught. We actually use that stuff to teach. Mm. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Will you do an episode teaching children about racism? Because I feel like racism, that understanding is something that a lot of us are confused about. I know Dr. Francis Cress Welsin talks about it. Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. talks about it. Do you plan on doing an episode touching on racism?
I wouldn't mind doing that. I know right now we actually developed a lesson for the Conscious Ingenuity program that deals with racism. But turning that into an actual animation, I think that would be hot. But I know right now with the Conscious Ingenuity program, we're working on developing a lesson that speaks about race. You know, the whole concept of race and racism. Where did that come from? You know, and we need to tell that story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. I know we are short on time, but I wanted to do a quick little activity, if you have the time for it, before we wrap up, called What's Your Favorite? Identifying a few of your favorite things.
Okay.
If you don't mind.
I don't mind.
All right. Cool. Cool. What is your, this might be a difficult one for you. What's your favorite lesson from Black history?
Oh my goodness. What is my favorite lesson? So what do you mean by my favorite lesson? Are you saying my favorite, okay. So favorite lesson from history is so many,
Like something that I guess you look back on for your present, like that Sankofa concept that, you know, you look back in history and use it in your present kind of thing.
Oh my goodness. It's so many. You said so my favorite lesson in history. Oh my goodness. I'm thinking about the teachings of Marcus Garvey. I'm thinking about the teachings of Booker T. Washington. I always hold that those lessons in high regard. And even Dr. Frances Cress Welsin, when she talks about how not resting until, you know, Black children are to love themselves as themselves. And I think that would probably be one of my favorite quotes, one of my favorite, I guess I that doesn't constitute a lesson per se, but that's something that she often spoke about is us, you know, teaching Black children love themselves as themselves. So I guess what I would get my favorite lesson in history, when I think about the sum total of our ancestors, is just loving us, loving ourselves as ourselves. And as Baba Ashwa Kwesi recently stated, seeing the divinity in ourselves and seeing the divinity, the Black divinity in each other. So I guess that would be the lesson. Loving ourselves.
Got you. That's a good one. Favorite historical era.
Favorite historical era. That's hard because I'm like, would I go back to like, damn, I mean, like, would I go back to the days of Garvey? Ooh, I would go back there. That's rough. Do I want to go back there or do I want to go back to the Black Power movement where you had Kwame Ture, Malcolm X on the scene, Dr. King and all of them were on the scene. The Nation of Islam was strong. like, do you want to go there? Do I want to go all the way back to our history in ancient Kemet, where our ancestors were building the pyramids? Do I want to go there? Do I want to go back to West Africa prior to, you know, the Arabic and European invasions? Like, where do you want to go? It's so many eras. I wouldn't mind if I had a time machine. I wouldn't mind going to all of those different eras, you know, just to see, you know, do I want to go back to like the 1920s in the Greenwood or Greenwich district, you know, Tulsa, prior to them burning it down, just to see those Black people living like that. You know, it's so many places I would want to travel. So, brother, I can't answer that. It's so much.
You just took us on a mail trek right there.
Yeah. Right. Like so many things I would want to see, you know?
Yeah. There's a lot in history that's, you know, that breathtaking moments, things to that, you know, that are worthy of being present at the time.
Absolutely.
You've mentioned quite a number of authors. What are some of your favorite books?
Okay, so of course, Anthony T. Browder. So From the Browder File, Nile Valley Contributions to Civilization, Dr. Kwame Nakoto, African-Centered Education, Theory and Practice, Blueprint for Black Power. Oh, gotta read that. That's like a Bible. Everyone should have that in their libraries. The Developmental Psychology of the Black Child, Dr. Naeem Akbar's work, you know Thyself, Breaking the Chains of Psychological Slavery, Community of Self, which is like a 68-page book, but extremely packed, like powerful and packed with a lot of good information.
Some of the books that you mentioned, like if you go to Amazon, they're like $300. Like I know you mentioned a few connections to some bookstores and things like that. What is there any,
go to everyone's place, go to everyone's place. If they're talking crazy prices on Amazon, head on over to Everyone's Place, call them up. Everyone's Place, located in Baltimore, Maryland, they ship around the world, you know?
Beautiful.
And so, yeah. And it's a black owned and operated bookstore, you know? So I would hit up, you know, black owned and operated bookstores before I would get it off of Amazon. So I would call at, you know, Everyone's Place. I know there's like an African centered bookstore in Philly. There's another one, Black Dot bookstore in Atlanta. So I would hit up those places first, you know, and then if they didn't have what I need, then look at Amazon.
Got it. Favorite person that you would like to sit down and chat with?
My paternal grandmother. Yeah, she transitioned when I was three. And I heard that she was a community activist. I heard so many things about her. I heard that I look like her. I have her same spirit. I have her same passion to help, you know, black people, to advance black people. So if there's anybody that I would want to sit down with and pick their brain about certain things, it would definitely be Myrtle Bailey.
Got it. All right. Favorite black media, either movie, television show, cartoon that you could think of?
Favorite black media. Well, when I think of black media, man, I got to go back to the days of Spike Lee. Spike Lee produced some of my favorite films, you know, Do the Right Thing, Malcolm X, even though, I mean, I know there were some issues with Malcolm X, his biopic of Malcolm X. But nonetheless, I mean, when I think of black media back then, no one does it like Spike Lee. So, you know, Jungle Fever, School Days, Crooklyn. So when my favorite black media or black producer or black director, I would give it up to Spike Lee.
All right, gotcha. And favorite life gem that anybody has given you just to really help you maneuver through life?
Favorite life gem. I'm thinking about my Uncle Melvin. He went by the name Bismillah Rahim. He always talked about be yourself. You know, and that's what that was his jewel. Just be yourself. Don't try to be anybody else but yourself. And that is my jewel right there. Just be authentically and unapologetically you. Be your authentic self, your organic self. Just be you. Be yourself.
Got it. You know, I know we think about Black History Month as a means of like just every day is Black History Month. But
that's right.
This year is Black Resistance, which I think is interesting. So what is your favorite incidents of Black Resistance?
I mean, I got several of them. You know, we can go back to the Maroon history, right? And talk about those Maroon communities that were formed all throughout North America and down in Mexico and down in, you know, the Caribbean. So the Maroon history, the history of the Maroons, you know, where the Maroons were fighting back. You know, you got that time of the resistance when we were right there on the continent fighting, times of resistance when we were in the waters fighting. You know, sometimes our brothers and sisters took over whole ships. Took over whole ships during the Middle Passage. So you got resistance on the boats. You have resistance on the continent. You got resistance in the Caribbean, in North America, South America. You got resistance on the plantation. You know, you got Nat Turner Rebellion. You know, you got the Denmark Vesey or Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser. You have all of that. You got Harriet Tubman. You got resistance. Not even just, you know, when we think about resistance, we think about bloody and gory. But what about the resistance where you had them brothers and sisters that just poisoned the people that were in the house, just poison enslavement. So it's so much resistance. Then you got the Haitian, you know, revolution, that resistance over there. Then you move up. What else we got? We got the resistance. You know, look at what happened in Tulsa. You know, that popped off. That was resistance there. They were trying to hang that brother, you know, that was accused of touching a woman on the elevator. And the brothers were like, no. And the gun went out right outside the courthouse and there was resistance there. They did fight. They lost, but they fought. But that was resistance. Then we have resistance during, you know, the Black Power movement. And so, I mean, you're saying my favorite.
So now as we touch on just legacy, you know, what is the legacy that you want, you know, to leave behind with the work that you're doing and all either the work that you're doing in the school with your family, with Meltrek, what is that legacy that you want to leave behind and be remembered for?
I want to be remembered. I want to be remembered for liberating our people and advancing our people through education. Right. And I'm talking about STEM education. Education, you know, regarding our history and our culture. I want to be known for that. Wow, she really woke up, you know, the people through through education. She educated our people, you know, to do for self. You know, she educated our people, you know, she gave them the tools to liberate ourselves, to nation build and do for ourselves. I want to be known for that. I want to be known for taking, I keep telling folks, I want to be like the next Booker T. Washington. You know how Booker T. Washington created the Tuskegee Institute? Well, I'm in the process of creating the Conscious Ingenuity Institute here in Baltimore City. And so, and that's an African-centered institution which teaches African history, culture, and STEAM. And so I want to not only build it in Baltimore City, but I want to build Conscious Ingenuity Institute all over the world and give our people the tools, the knowledge, and the tools to liberate and advance ourselves. Right. So that means that we don't have to worry about sending our children somewhere else to get educated, somewhere else to get a job. You know, now they know who they are. They're brought up in it. And they had the tools to build their own nation. That's what I want to be remembered for. Giving our people the tools, the knowledge, the tools to do for self and to be ourselves unapologetically and to create spaces for our people to be ourselves and to prosper in those spaces.
Man, Dr. Maat, thank you so much. I think that all of those things are going to come to fruition because you're doing so much work for the community, for your family, for Black people, the collective. So definitely appreciate all of that. And thank you for coming on, man, and just blessing us with some gems. I feel like we just did a Meltrek, you know, in this episode. So appreciate that, man. I appreciate that.
Appreciate you, Warrior. Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. We will definitely have you back on the program because I got some other thoughts and ideas about, you know, some things I'd like to ask you. But we usually ask our guests to leave us with their favorite quote and what it means to them. So do you think you could leave us with your favorite quote?
Again, my favorite quote, and I said it earlier, by Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. And Dr. Frances Cress Welsing said, you know, she said, I will not rest until Black children are taught to love themselves as themselves. Well, I'll say to her that Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, you go ahead and rest. Because right now, and I've picked up that mantra, I've picked up that torch, the mantle, to say that I won't rest until Black children learn to love themselves as themselves. So that's one of my favorite quotes. Actually, it's on my Facebook page. Favorite quote.
Powerful, powerful, powerful. All right, folks, check out Dr. Maat. She has a YouTube channel. She has information for us, for the children and for the adults. So real quick, Dr. Maat, can you share where people can find you and get information from about what you do and the work and how we can support your work?
All right. So check out the website, edanimeproductions.com. That's E-D-A-N-I-M-E productions.com. We're actually getting ready to like revamp the whole website. But check that out, man. You know, and that website will direct you to our other sites like consciousingenuity.com, the Asafo camp.com. But edanimeproductions.com will be like the hub where you go there and get whatever you need. Okay. And so check me out there. Also follow me on all social media platforms. I'm on Instagram as Dr. Maat, M-A-A-T underscore. On Instagram, on TikTok, I think they had me down as my whole name, Dr. Oya Edwa Maat on TikTok. On Twitter is Dr. underscore Maat because I couldn't get Dr. Dot Maat. So it's Dr. underscore Maat on Twitter. And then and also follow me on YouTube, you know, at Dr. Oya Edwa Maat. I have my own YouTube channel, Truth to Power Talk, with Dr. Ma'at. So be sure to check me out on there.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Listeners, make sure you support the work, get the Meltrek episodes, get the material for your kids, and definitely check out the work she's doing for Black adults as well. And thank you for listening. As always, remember, your mind is the most powerful tool in the universe. Therefore, if you can think it, you can do it. If you believe in it, you can be it. And if you fight for it, you can have it. The world is yours. This has been your host, Mr. G. And I will see you next time on Mastermind. So every day I'm going hard. I'm talking business, bank accounts, and credit cards. And somehow we defeat the odds and making sure that no one starve. Illegal or you had a job. And when they doubted me, brought the best out of me. The women want to holler, the fellas want to shout at me. Voices in my head, I swear they're getting kind of loud at me. And how I turn this thing into gold, see this is alchemy. They never know, never.